Hi, everybody. This is Poetic Desires, and this is episode number 24 of Daddy's Good Girl. It is Sunday, July 26th. Just as a warning, this is an adult podcast, so if you are under the age of 18, please visit scarletteen.com. So guys, once again, this is actually pretty awesome. I get to record a podcast with other people. I know it's amazing. Once again, this is another groupie chat. I just finished up the Baltimore Grew with a bunch of friends. So, bunch of friends, say hi and say your name.
Hi, I'm Evan.
Hi, I'm Mara.
Hi, this is Ella.
Hi, I'm Deb.
Hi, I'm Bill.
So those are my friends, and we're all going to chat now about our Baltimore Grew. So who had a really awesome time at the Grew?
Yay.
Yes. Does anybody want to...
very tired.
Yeah. This is Sunday right now, guys, in case you don't know. So we're all pretty much exhausted. But so, Deb, what was one of the highlights for you for your Grew?
Talking about rape things.
Can you elaborate, please?
I feel like every time I come to a Grew lately, at some point we end up talking about the different ways we can approach consent and the different ways we can go about consensual non-consent. And the past couple of times it's been slightly more structured than it has been in the past, where we just sort of like sit down at lunch and like talk about rape loudly in a restaurant, which is not appropriate.
But funny.
It's totally
but
cool.
Hilarious.
The kids get alarmed.
But a thing we do.
But this time we put a class up on the board, and we had this really wonderful conversation about the different ways we can approach consent as we get farther into the scene, as we become more educated players. And it was really nice to see where everybody came from and how everybody approaches it differently.
Yes, alternative consent models. The class that went like, I think, 2+ hours or something like that. I kept having to push back. I think it was. I had to push back two of my classes. It was a good conversation, though. So.
So this tells me that when I said I could pretty much talk about CNC all day long, I was not actually exaggerating.
That's exactly right.
Yes.
It was the second time, I think second or third time, we've done the alternative consent models discussion. Which I always get a little bit nervous about, but always goes really well. People have really varied opinions on it, and no one that we've got has actually been contentious in a malicious sort of way. Like, we haven't gotten anyone going, "You're terrible people for practicing this kind of consent."
But I think that's why we're always nervous. I think our greatest fear is always that, like, somebody's going to show up and be like, "You guys are the worst kinksters in the world. Don't you know about SSC?"
So funny that you mentioned that, because one part of the conversation was, is it worse to be violated or to be accused of violating someone?
Yeah, I thought that was a really interesting place for the conversation to go.
Yeah.
And, like, it's not something I had ever considered, and the second I did consider it, I had, like, really powerful feelings about it.
I honestly couldn't pick which one.
Oh, I could. In a second.
Yeah.
I think I really enjoyed that class, and like I actually enjoyed the fact that it went on for hours and it was still interesting for most of it. I think it was really great. I would love to see like a, it sound pretentious for a second, like a 201
model of the class. Because there is
alternative consent models 201, rape harder.
The raping.
Oh God.
So, but one of the things, I mean, like it was a really good conversation, but there was just so much. Like talking to people who clearly just didn't have a more
nuanced
appreciation of the topic and had to like work through several layers of it before they could get to the point of like understanding exactly what people were trying to talk about.
And one of the wonderful and sort of like infuriating things about the Grew at the same time is the ability to walk in and out of conversations.
Right.
But a conversation like that goes places. It starts and then it progresses towards places. And if you walk in the middle and aren't quite sure where we all are, then you have the capacity by one question or two questions to drag the whole conversation back 45 minutes.
The only thing that frustrated me with that was like there was one guy who came in like halfway through and was like, "Well, why do we even need consent?" And I was like, "Okay, well let's take a giant step."
He sounded like
devil's advocate-y though, or trying to be.
He was trying to be, but we had already like kind of established the level that we were all working at and our common understanding of what we were talking about. So it was like, okay, well, if we're asking that, like, that's kind of beyond the scope of this discussion even. We can't really start it without an understanding that consent is important and why it's valuable, so...
So, and frankly, I don't know the guy very well, but he just kind of sounded like a jackass when he was asking that question.
Like,
I love to feed it out at that point. I was like, boop, boop, boop.
I was like, really?
I like and that he bought 2 feet has video game.
You have bandits.
I have culture.
One of my favorite.
Is the best thing ever.
I know, seriously.
It's great, and I use it all the time.
I got to break the law of 2 feet at the last event. It was really great.
Yes! You got to break 2 feet?
No, the law of 2 feet. The law of 2 feet.
Got to break the law of 2 feet.
We are not breaking bones.
At Madison Grew, they needed somebody to do a DM training class because there were a couple people who were going to be DMing for the after group who hadn't been through the local group's DM course, and there was nobody else to teach it. And the person who was going to teach it, I guess, like, wasn't able to come at the last minute. So Gray asked me to like teach a DM class. So I got to do a session during the Grew that was, you know, DM training, basically, right?
But for
the two people who hadn't been through the training yet, and we're going to be DMing later, they couldn't leave. So, I mean, granted, like, the rest of, like, there were, you know, 12 or so other people there who actually wanted to be there, presumably. But yeah, that just amused me that I got to break the law. That made me happy.
Of course it does.
I find
myself using the law of 2 feet like my own life now.
So,
so wonderful. And like I explain it to people and I'm just like, this is a thing. And it's one of those things that when I'm evangelizing for BDSM and kink, I'm just like, we also have like these structures that allow us so much freedom in the way we learn.
So real quickly, does somebody want to explain the law of 2 feet for the audience in case anybody hasn't been to a group?
So the law of 2 feet is that if you aren't benefiting from what's going on in front of you, you take your contributing to. You take your 2 feet and you go somewhere you can.
Yes.
And then there's no offense taken at it. There's no offense meant by it. It's just that there's something that you're more passionate about that matters more in that moment, and that's great, because then we're all actually pursuing the things we want to be doing, and you know everyone there in your class really is invested.
Right.
Yeah. As a corollary, if you have one or no feet, you are still able to use the law of 2 feet to go somewhere else.
Yeah. No, explain the corollary.
Well, the corollary is that the law of 2 feet is not intended to be ableist, though the name is sort of ableist.
Well, no, because the idea is that if you do not have 2 feet, you then move two feet away.
Oh, yes.
In another direction towards something that is going to be good for you.
There we go.
Yes. Bringing it back.
Exactly.
I actually ended up talking about that after the Pittsburgh Grew, because one of our mutual friends had taught a class where it was towards the end of the day. There were a bunch of people there that were clearly really interested, but were, like, just so tired. Some of them were, like, drowsing off, but we're still like there and like trying actively to stay awake for it. And he was all disappointed because he was like, man, this thing means so much to me, and like people weren't even staying awake, like they were bored. And it was like, no, law of 2 feet. They cared enough that they were fighting to stay there even though they were fucking falling asleep.
Exactly.
That means it was awesome and you stop that now.
Yes, you are a good friend.
Aggressive reassurance is what we call that.
Oh.
Yeah, telling somebody how it is.
Yeah, the non-standard consent models was definitely a really great conversation. What was the one right before that, before lunch?
My poly self-awareness class.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we could talk about that now. So
I just thought I missed that.
It was, hold on. Okay, for those who don't know, I'm a huge nerd. I took notes.
Yeah.
We started talking about that at Food on Friday.
Oh, yes. Yes, we did. Like, yeah, but in vaguer terms.
So what do you mean by poly self-awareness?
So for me, the idea sprung from I had just gone to a poly panel at Black Rose, actually, the Tuesday before, so this past Tuesday. And one of my friends, Amethyst, was the moderator for the panel, and one of the comments brought up was that in poly as a person, if you want to be an ethical, honest, good practicing poly person, you should be self-aware. You should know your needs and your wants, but also, and this is the thing that pinged for me, knowing your fears and then being able to communicate them with your partner, because without that full understanding of yourself, you're not going to be a good partner to the other person. You're not going to get the emotional help and reassurance that you need. So then I wanted to talk about people. So self-awareness, go. And it kind of meandered all over. Like there was like sections on NRE, and then there was like
understanding jealousy and envy.
Yeah. And then
user manuals.
Yeah. Manual part was nice.
And then like postmortems of relationships.
Yeah, that was,
and
that was good.
Yeah.
That was the kind of thing you and I were talking about on Friday. Like how after a poly breakup, while a lot of us want to tend to try to like assign blame and figure out whose fault it is that things went wrong, that's not actually useful.
Yeah, and it's trying to figure out like who were you as a person in a relationship, who is your partner, how do you want to change the person, what type of partner do you want to find, similar or different to it. So an actual like logical postmortem of what happened as opposed to all of the feels.
An after-action report.
Yes.
Where you objectively look at the things like you could improve on, things you did great, and actually be able to move on and work on things from there rather than just getting stuck in like the emotional blame game that sometimes happens with
pretty much
polydominoes especially.
And actually during the session it was like there was the point made where you could go to somebody who was like a third party neutral, kind of likes both people involved, and then just sort of logically talk out all the things that happen and have them be a sounding board for you. But I am not at that place right now, so later. So yes. So oh, okay. Apparently they're having fun next door.
They didn't get on the
mouth. Whatever.
I heard something about pushing a button.
Oh.
I assume that was actually the camera, but I'm going to hope it was something more interesting.
Yes. Because, like, people are in next door in the next room over. They're doing some really awesome photography. Or we're being, like, nerds in a corner to making a podcast. By the way, thank you guys for helping me with this.
We're being antisocial together.
Yes.
Antisocial, that's elitism.
Our own special little
T-shirts
group.
Made. Right.
Six of one, half dozen of the other.
Starting our FetLife group. Antisocial elitism, I like that.
I'm just consistently impressed by the Baltimore's community to churn out incredible play spaces. Like, I just don't understand how they're doing it, and I wish that they could like export their model to other places.
Turns out rent is cheap in Baltimore.
Yeah, it is. It's ridiculously cheap. So it's ridiculously cheap.
And the law is permissive for a very Catholic city. Like, it's shocking.
Well, yeah, it's a Catholic city, but you have to also realize it's, like, also, I have a different perspective because I grew up here.
Right.
So, like, even comparing this to the D.C. area, like, there's just so many differences. Like, the revitalization in D.C. versus here, like, even, like, the civil unrest here versus there. There's just so many factors that make it much easier for people to do it here as, like, opposed to D.C. Like, that's the problem that Crucible had. Mm-hmm. Like, there's gentrification happening and... Yeah, because like there's gentrification happening in their neighborhood, so all of a sudden their lease shot up because the property owner realized I could be making more money if I sold it, yeah, and then somebody built a condo.
All the really great like cheap skeevy warehouses that you used to be able to kink in have gotten bulldozed down for like condo development.
Yeah, whereas here they have like they've been doing revitalization, but not to anywhere of the scale of DC. So you still have the opportunity to find spaces where it's like, it's in a corner, we're not going to be bothered, and, you know, the authorities know we're not doing anything that's horrible. So
it's funny. I don't know if it's like a chicken and the egg thing, but it feels like great spaces cultivate a really good community here, or is it a great community cultivates really cool spaces? Because Baltimore's community is enviable. Like, we all look at Baltimore and we're like, why is your rip so good? Please give us your rip scene.
Or really, why are you so far away?
So far away, I would wish I could live here.
Why is Baltimore 6 hours from me?
I think it is the people, although admittedly, you know, the people do migrate to places that support it. But, like, I mean, if you look at, like, where, like, any of the big groups around here, like, go back to where, like, how they were actually founded. And, you know, when they were founded, like, a lot of them, when they started, like, it was way before all this. Like, I mean, there's such a proliferation now of all these kink events and all these groups popping up. And they're able to sort of come into this fertile environment that has been created. But if you look back to when that wasn't the case, like Black Rose was founded in, like, 70?
Before I was born.
It only beats Tess by, like, 5 or 6 years. Yeah. Or it only loses to Tess by, like, 5 or 6 years.
Yeah. So it's been around for
a while. And when they started, it was, like, you know, Jack McGeorge and a bunch of other people putting, like, an ad in one of the skeevy newspapers. And, like, 60 guys and one very concerned woman show up at their space. And they sure as shit weren't telling the cops about it. That's like, how things started back then. You know, and you know, through a lot of hard work and dedication and effort, they were able to create sort of the spaces. And admittedly, you know, they created their spaces in the places where the laws allowed it, and then that encouraged other people to sort of come into those spaces. And I think there's a lot of feedback back and forth, but I think a lot of it really does come down to the people. You know, people make spaces work.
And it feels like there is a lot of like community structures here, like not just old organizations like Black Rose, but also like things like Bondage Club Baltimore and like the proliferation of Rope Bite around here. And like there's like a very supportive atmosphere.
Well, there's also the fact that like there's the bigger groups, but there's the smaller groups too. Like you've got Nodding Circle, you've got DC Rogue, but like you have Hitchin' Bitches. You have all of these groups that, you know, people break off, I want to do this subsect, and I could just be a little pod over here, but I'll also come back to yours. And so
like each group helping each other too is really nice.
But it's the nice that the splinter groups don't just completely isolate and fracture the scene, because I feel like that's what happens most other places.
That's what I see a lot of the time is like, you're not this group is not exactly what I need at exactly this moment, so I'm going to create my own thing and I am an island.
It's easy to lose track. Like it's easy to sort of being in like sort of the DC metro area scene, like, you know, it feels like everybody's always arguing about everything and everybody's already always disagreeing about everything. But if you go anywhere else in the country, like our group, our scene at large or whatever, right, is way more cohesive and you know, like getting along well than like anywhere else. I mean,
if you think about, like, for the bickering and the splintering and both, like, the good splintering and the not-so-good splintering, you still have lots of crossover of the different groups. And because we have so many of them here, like, it's just, we're kind of spoiled. Oh, like, between Baltimore, D.C., and a little bit of Frederick, like, so spoiled.
Like, yeah, I mean, because, you know, you go to somewhere like Philly, and it's like, oh, everything's sort of small and isolated, and everybody argues all the time, and everything always falls apart. Or you go to New York, and it's all, like, private, you know, scenes, and, like, people don't get along, whatever. But, like, if you go to somewhere that's, like, not... So, like, you know, you go to, like, a major metropolitan area, and it's like, oh, this is way less good, effectively, just sort of king scene-wise. But you go anywhere outside of those major metropolitan areas, and it is, like, fucking no man's land.
Oof.
Like, it is dark and scary. Like, I mean, I went to debauchery in North Carolina last year.
Yeah, because I went this year and you weren't there.
Yeah. And I was amazed that they had a thing, because I'm from North Carolina originally, and when I was first down there, like, you know, when I was first getting involved in the scene before I moved to the D.C. area, like, there were these tiny groups that had, like, under-the-radar parties, like, you know, 20 people at a house party kind of things. There were a couple of groups that were doing, like, monthly classes that were very, like, you know, quiet. But, like, you know, the fact that they're actually having, like, a monthly, an annual, like, large hotel event there is amazing that they're able to do that, like, sort of above the board. But even then, I mean, that's like, if you go down there, like, that's the kind of stuff that they have. They have, like, a big party once a year and some smaller things here and there. Like, we have just everything all the time.
I made the joke, well, when I was first starting out in the local scene here, I wanted to go to everything. And I actually realized I could go to a happy hour on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then a party on Friday and Saturday every week if I wanted to. Mm-hmm. It was amazing.
There was... Sometimes I love it and sometimes I don't, but the Daily Flogger, which just makes fun of us all the time. But it's amazing. It's like the headlines are hilarious. There was a headline like 6 months ago or 7 months ago that was, study finds that 1/3 of all kink events happen on the East, or happen in Baltimore. I was just like, yeah, that's about right. Because if you follow BDSM calendar on Twitter, like every third post is like, this thing's happening in Baltimore. I was like, of course it is. Of course it is. Because Baltimore's 2 hours for me. So
of course. So my desk is going to be drinking our cup of bitter.
It's okay.
I will say, being from a less busy area, I feel pretty blessed with the community that I came up in. Because I feel like Rochester may be sort of unique in what we have. Yes. It definitely has its issues too.
But it's crowd.
Yeah, it's super centralized, which is both good and has some negatives. But it's a really solid support system, and it has, like, we were up to 15 to 20 events a month for a while.
Wow.
Right. For, like, not a large area, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, with an active membership, generally hovering in the 150 range for, like, at least the last 5 years.
No, that's an exaggeration. When I came into the scene, like, 5-6 years ago, we were at 70. We've grown up to, like, 140 or higher in the past 5 years.
Mm.
So we've grown a lot in a short time period, which is also part of it. But, I mean, we have generally at least 3 to 5 workshops every month. We have 2 parties a month, if not 3. I'm definitely envious of scenes where there are more opportunities, but at the same time, like, there are other spaces I've been to which are really nice outside of larger metropolitan areas.
So since we're kind of talking about this, do we want to, like, pimp some stuff? Like, because this seems like a good time in the podcast to start pimping different, like, things going on. Like, I've got a class coming. You guys are organizing an event. So, meh.
Sure.
Okay.
Everyone should go to the Australia Guru.
Yes, you motherfucker. The only one here who gets to go to Australia.
So that I'm not the only American there.
No, you won't be. Gary will be there. Yes, yeah, there you go. There'll be 3 of you.
Do you want to buy me a plane ticket to Australia? Because I'll go in a second.
I would if I could. I can barely buy me a plane ticket, but I'm just going anyway because...
Because it's Australia.
Awesome. Yeah.
Man.
I'm hit by anything.
I was, oh, yeah.
Where is the Osprey?
Do they have pet players there that do koala play?
I bet they do. Oh, and God, kangaroo play.
They call them little roos.
I'm in space right now. It's so big.
Oh God, I hope that's a thing. I hope that's a thing. That's going to be so great.
Where is the Osprey?
It's near Sydney.
Okay.
Yeah, in New South Wales.
No problem. Yeah, go to the Osprey.
Yeah,
sounds awesome.
But before you go to the Osprey.
The week before you go to the Osprey, you should come to Ramble Grew, which is a 3-day weekend event at Ramblewood, but also a GRU, and also all-inclusive. And tickets right now are $125. But if you don't buy them soon, they will soon be $150, because as soon as we sell 100, $125 tickets, the price goes up.
Yep. You guys want to comment on the amazing pricing thing that you did?
Sure. Somebody else on the pricing structure.
So what we did with the pricing structure is that we... You know how most kink events, like, the closer you get to the event, the more expensive it gets, until you get to, like, 2 weeks away and the prices become, you didn't think to buy a ticket, pay $400. We decided that we were just going to open up all the levels of our tickets at the same time. So we had $100 tickets, $125 tickets, and $150 tickets, all of which are all-inclusive, all of which include, like, a bed in your cabin or your meals.
Which makes it, by the way, one of the most affordable, I think probably the most affordable.
Yes, at Ramblewood, yeah.
By $190.
Yeah, like ridiculously affordable.
Yeah, well, we're not trying to actually make money off of it, so, you know.
So, as a side note, both you and Debauchery are the only two events that I know that are profit neutral, and I find that profit neutral events tend to be better because they're less worried about money and more worried about making the event awesome.
Yeah. We're building the event we want to have happen. Like,
yeah.
We're building this thing because nobody else was, and we really wanted to go to it.
Pretty much that's what Sisyphean Noel Moniker said. It's like,
And our motivation was, I mean, we've all been to a bunch of GRUs. We love the way it builds community, and we thought this could be a really good way to help build the broader community. Since Ramblewood is kind of the place that a ton of people from the kink community come, we can have, like, the discussions that actually need to happen, and hopefully we'll end up with enough of a profit that we can put some back into the community, too, and help out further that way. That's the goal.
But to go back to the ticket prices real quick, so we opened all three ticket levels at once to basically be like, if you're in a better place financially, buy a more expensive ticket so somebody who isn't in a good place can afford one of those $100 tickets later.
I'm assuming the $100 tickets are sold out.
Oh, yeah, they're gone.
Yeah.
They've been gone for a while.
People aren't that generous.
So, the one, Q explained the really awesome one really high ticket price. Oh, no, you have three of them?
There's three of them.
Yes.
So, if you are the type of person who has $1,000 to burn on an event, we have what are called the Ramble Grew Rockstar tickets. And those involve, every morning, Grey Dancer and Naya will bring you coffee. And Grey Dancer will sweetly serenade you. I've been promised a sweet serenade. as he brings you coffee or your beverage of choice, or, like, coffee with an additional beverage of your choice in it.
Because this is an adults-only event.
Yes. So Grey and I have a little bet going on whether or not anybody is actually going to want to spend $1,000 on an event. I'm not going to tell you guys who's on what side of this bet, but we kind of both win either way.
And just think, I know, if you bought that $1,000 ticket, four different you're helping people, so many people.
I've had like four different people tell me that, like, oh, we're looking at that ticket.
It comes with two entrances. Is that
it? Does come. It comes with you and a plus one.
Oh, okay. This is even better, actually.
Yeah.
So technically, it's only $500.
Yeah, technically, it's $500 tickets.
Gray has promised to make anyone's event who buys that ticket very worthwhile, like very worth the money. I'm super curious to see what he and I would come up with if someone buys that. Because it'll be a show.
Yeah.
It'll be something not to
miss. It'll definitely be a show.
Yeah.
But we have about 50 $125 tickets left. And when they're gone, they're gone. There's nothing we can do. But if we sell these $1,000 tickets, they will go a very, very long way to helping offset the cost of what is guaranteed to be a really nice but very expensive event.
Very expensive for us. Very not expensive.
Very
for
not expensive for you guys.
One of the great things about it was that part of the reason for the pricing structure was also we tried to recognize the people who were generous enough to help others out. So if you when we had the $100 ticket prices open, if you bought the $125 ones, you get a silver star on your badge, just to let everyone know that, hey, you were awesome and did this thing. If you buy the $150 ones, you get a gold star. And I don't know what we were doing for the Rockstar one, but something unique.
I think you get both, and then also, great answer, serenade you there.
I guess that's probably going to be a parent's
The other thing that was really cool is, you know, if you volunteer at an event, like almost every event ever, you get a discounted or free admission. We had a bunch of our volunteers who were like, just give those discounts to other people.
Aww.
We don't need them, give them away.
Yeah,
it was great.
It was really cool.
And we had a really wonderful set of volunteers who bought really high priced, who were our volunteers, who came to us and said, we would like to help you with this event. And when we offered them a volunteer ticket, they said no. And then they did not buy the $100 tickets. They bought the $125 tickets or the $150 Aww. Tickets. So not only are they going to show up and help us all weekend, but they also paid more than full price at the time to come and help us volunteer.
Yeah.
So if you pay it forward, if you create a price, what I've learned from this is if you create a pricing structure that people deem fair, they will really rise above what you expect them to do.
And maybe events could do this and make our lives better.
That it is a it's designed to be a profit neutral event, because there is something that's a little bit
capitalist,
which is just a little bit bothersome about events that are for profit events that are, for the vast majority, run off of volunteer sweat labor. Like when your volunteers are breaking their back to make the event, and certain people are taking home all the money from it, like that's a little bothersome.
It leaves you feeling like, and I feel like all of us are people who have put time into events in one capacity or another. We're all like repeated volunteers. I see you all volunteer at events. I do the same, but when you put all that time and all that energy into something, you want to feel like you're serving the community. And sometimes it's hard at these four big, while they're wonderful events, and like I would never stop going to them because they do us community service to some extent. You want to feel like you're serving the community. You don't want to feel like you're working for an event promotion company. And so sometimes that's hard. And we're trying to make this feel like as much as everybody else's event as it is like the six or seven of us who are running it.
Hey, so Ramble Grew, people should buy tickets.
Come on.
RambleGrew.org.
Want to repeat that?
www.ramblegrew.org.
Okay,
and at Ramble Grew on Twitter.
I've gotten in all the shameless plugs.
So
out of curiosity, did like anybody get to like play much?
Here?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Had a scene,
Wow. Okay, I'm impressed. I'm always so fucking exhausted at the aftergrew. Right. I can never promise anything, so.
Yeah.
Sometimes you don't even make it to the aftergrew.
There were so few people here last night.
I was exhausted last night. I still played. Heather messaged me this morning to let me know her IT band is still hurting.
Oh, yay!
That was so nice of her.
IT bands are good for that.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Mine is a, like, jumping knee gouge into her IT band.
Ow! And damn.
Bill's a mean guy.
Yeah. I just tormented Ella. I just tormented Ella with a single column around the ankle that I just kept tying off to different points in the frame.
So she much fun and so hurty.
She was just stuck in this like static space, but I would just keep pulling the leg into a different position every so often.
That was like just the perfect level of challenging and at times really sucky. Because my rope tolerance is down significantly since I don't rope bottom as much. Yeah, it happens.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the best reference I could get. Awesome.
But yeah, we kept, like, she had tied me in this position. Normally I get up and I can try to move around to make it, you know, more bearable for myself. I was just stuck. Like, I could only do micro movements, and it was semi-miserable. My calf, like, had these fucking indents.
I also learned a couple of weeks ago how to load a Futamomo so that all the weight sits on the shin bone.
Ow! Jesus!
What?
Ow.
Yeah.
Listen, the shin is a very strong bone. It can take a whole
lot. Right. How? Yeah. I make sure that the Y-hanger is high up on the thigh, and then I make sure that the upline is pretty short so that all the weight that is being absorbed by the Fudo is being absorbed on the shin bone.
It worked.
She's got like these giant indents in her shin, and when I pulled the rope off, it like peeled off. I was like, this is amazing.
So we found out after the scene, when I described it as, man, it just feels like cutting, burning pain on my shin. That's because my skin was being compressed directly into my bone and, like, rubbing it raw with the rope. So it was pretty accurate.
There's, like, no padding there. It's like
right.
skin, nerves, bone. Make a sandwich.
That sounds like a delicious sandwich.
Okay, so we need to put that in the Grunomicon. You realize that, right?
Sure.
We're just saying.
What did you do, Evan?
Did a floor work scene in the like padded. So they have a here at the Charm City.
We're here at Charm City Places.
Yeah.
So they have a great padded wrestling room that has a nice thick pad that's good, like not thick enough that it's uncomfortable to walk on or awkward or like you know gonna make you fall down easy, but nice for like kneeling on and working. So I just had a rope scene in there that was all floor work, very simple. And, yeah.
So oh my God, have you guys seen the hole in the wall?
Yes.
No.
Yeah. Oh my God! You haven't seen the hole in the wall, the wrestling
Later
roll.
In the day, there was a hole in the wall.
Yes.
Later in the day, there was not.
Yes. Yes.
So we created a hole.
Yes. During the GRU, like right as the GRU ended, like after closing circle, two people went in there and they grappled, and like one person, like they grappled rather hard, and one person slammed a person in the wall, and so now there's a hole there. It's like a little person-sized hole in the wall.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
It looks
so
awesome.
So they are like, that's character.
Exactly. Exactly. It's not like harmful. It's in the wall. Exactly. Like you can really play hard here.
Person was here.
It's basically evidence that people play fucking hard at Charm City, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Also, this like beautiful thing they have set up in the middle of the main room with like all the hard points,
oh,
like
a points.
Ring of suspension,
and like if I can just picture it like with somebody hanging from every point, it's just so pretty here.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Also, I want to say like the coolest thing about this space, Barnett. I've been in a lot of nice play spaces, with, like nice furniture, etc. I have never been in one that has a gigantic indoor cigar lounge. With,
oh
like,
yeah,
couches everywhere. It's fucking.
It's like the inside of Ashton's here.
Oh my God.
I wish they had like an external exit for it or something. Like I have a friend, you know, his couple, and one of the members of the couple is a friend of mine, and he couldn't come to the event because he's very allergic to smoke in general.
Mm.
And because it's indoor, like every time you open that door,
you can
like,
smell it. Yeah,
you know, cigar smoke comes into the main space, and it's not terrible. Like I barely noticed
it. I never even noticed.
But apparently, like, he's been to the space once before and like can't come back.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
a shame. That's,
yeah.
So it's really great for everyone else.
Right. But it represents a certain set of problems.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, that was fun.
Like, get like a little mask, like a little mask station. You just put your mask on.
If they had like you know external venting fans to maintain negative pressure in the room or something like that,
yeah.
so that when you open the door, it went the other way. Yeah.
Well, I hear a smoke eater going on in there, going in there. Am
well,
I
right,
crazy?
But that's I mean that's it's only gonna enough. Yeah. You need like serious external venting to.
Uh-huh.
to
I mean, that room is really smoky.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the end of the night, like, we all walked out at the end of the night being like, I have a smoke headache.
But to be fair, how many people were smoking in there at one time?
Yeah. It was fun. When we got home, Mara's just smelled like cigar, which I enjoy personally, so that wasn't a problem. But, like, yeah, it was interesting.
I walked in and took a shower. Like, I walked in the door. Into the place we were staying last night, and I was like, the first thing I need to do is take a shower.
Like, because it gets like, in your hair, it gets in your clothes, even your underwear, it gets everywhere.
I was like, I smell like pink cigars. It's like gross.
I was too exhausted. I just passed the fuck out. But what amused me was I left the little koala bag in
there. Oh, no!
And I discovered this morning that the koala smells koala. Like smoke. So
yes.
It's like this little cute toddler type backpack that's filled with terrible things and smells like cigars.
Yeah, the toddler's backpack that smells like cigar and is full of like dildos and lube and rope.
That says something about a human being.
There's a story there.
I have to be very careful when I go back to work on Monday which bag I take with me. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Mm.
Well, I love
it. Smells like cigars and debauchery.
Did someone come on this?
You don't.
Is there semen on your koala hair?
It might be. I'm sure it's happened
been
at some
weekend,
point.
You know,
I mean, we have a friend who is also a member of the Tiny Backpack Club, which is like the greatest club of all time. Because all you need to do to be a member is have a tiny backpack, who like rubs her face on her tiny backpack while she's grinding on her Itachi.
Like, wow.
They just like a really rough texture on their face.
Oh, that would do it.
And so like sometimes it's like
pheromones.
Sometimes it's the car mat. Sometimes it's
yes,
the mat of the car. with those like grindy little things that she rubs her face on. But like one time I like walked into a room because like this is the friendship that we have, and she's like grinding her face on it, her tiny backpack while grinding on her attache.
It's pretty great.
We all have our things.
Everybody's got a thing. Like, I'm not judging. I think it's adorable.
It does sound pretty adorable, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Adorable wasn't the word that came to mind for me, but,
you know.
You know.
Ella, you're a bad person who objectifies people.
Shame. It's
true.
Shame. We've established I'm a dirty old man and a terrible human being.
You're a better dirty old man than I am.
That's so true.
It takes practice, you know.
Mm. Takes time. Energy.
I feel like I can also get away with more, which helps.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, because the packaging.
Bill and I get very different reactions if we're, like, doing the head-to-toe thing on a girl. I mostly get smiles.
I just don't do it.
Bill just doesn't do it. Right. And sometimes, like, we'll be, like, sitting outside. We sit outside and eat a lot, and I'll be like, ass. And he'll be like, what? I'll be like, over there. He's like, I'm not looking. What the fuck is wrong with you? Why will you not objectify these women with me? And he's like, because you're the worst feminist that ever existed on this planet.
Mara does this great thing where she's a 13-year-old boy on the inside. So we'll be walking down the street and like a hot ass will walk by and she'll just turn and stare at it. But like not an intentional look at me, like I'm being lascivious, but like in a completely unconscious, like... I'll be like, you're being a 13-year-old boy, and then she gets all embarrassed. It's pretty great.
I've had that trouble moving back into, like, more vanilla roles, because I was mostly doing freelance work, so I didn't have to worry that much about interacting with other humans.
Right.
And now at work, like, I have to be careful because I'm not out there, but, like, these girls will come in the store wearing, like, the shortest shorts and really low-cut tops, and I'm like... Your boobs are literally in my face. I'm trying so hard not to...
You are the rape culture.
I know. But I've been in the kink scene for like 5 years, and I haven't had to really like moderate that reaction as much as I now have to, and it's really hard.
It's very rough. Aww. You and the dude bros can commiserate on that.
And we totally do, I'm not going to lie.
We'll get you your fedora. It'll be in the mail.
I don't feel like I could rock a fedora.
Yeah, like a fedora kilt. Yeah,
I would wear a kilt.
At the last big event I was at, I feel like we all know that guy who tries too hard.
Yeah.
Yes. At the last event I was at, I saw a dude wearing a fedora, a motorcycle jacket, a kilt, and combat boots.
The fuck?
And it was all of it.
And he had the floggers at his side.
And he had the floggers.
God. I was like, there floggers on either side.
I was like, you are really hitting all the high points. Like, he just went online and said, how do I look like a douchey kinkster newbie? And, like, just wore all the things.
That's a look.
Yeah, that works for you. I don't think it does, but go ahead.
Is it getting you late?
Although, I think it'd be funny to, like, take it the next level and go ironic with it. Like, find, like, the cheapest, shittiest, most, like, dime store sex shop floggers you can get and hang, like, 8 of them.
Like a hula skirt.
And, like, a bandolier of cheap dildos. Like,
which size is yours? Do you like this one? No. This one? No.
Can you please do that next group?
Oh, my.
I want to see that.
That could be a thing. Maybe next Halloween.
You're cosplaying hipster kinkster.
Right.
We only know some of those.
Yeah, we all know that guy.
Yeah.
We all wish that guy would be different.
Figure out some way to ride a fixie into the club, you know.
So, since we're at about the 38-minute mark, does anybody else want to talk about anything else they have coming up? Any fun stuff?
If you're in Philly, come to the Aviary.
What's the Aviary?
The Aviary is Philly's currently only public play party. We run in the LGBT Community Center in Philadelphia. And we run a party that really runs the gamut. It caters mostly to newer people. We have a newbies corner. We have hosts and tours, but normally the hosts give tours that are also like a basic BDSM primer. We usually run a BDSM primer when we think there's going to be a lot of new people, but there's also like a rope room with a bunch of rigs and a mat room where you can wrestle and a giant full dungeon. So that anybody can attend. But it's a really fun party, so if you're in Philly, you should come.
Cool. Also, it's every second Saturday.
It's every second Saturday.
What do you have happening in Rochester?
In Rochester, let's see. Well, so I run Rope Bite every month. It happens twice a month up there. Next things I have coming up other than Ramble Grew are going to be teaching at Summerfest.
Oh, yes, Summerfest. Yes. I'll be there. I'll be helping with the Pamporium.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I'm doing some combination of teaching and volunteering. I'm not actually sure exactly which classes yet because we're still nailing that down, but it will be there. And then a week later, actually, I'm going to be presenting at RKS. I'm still waiting to hear which classes I'm doing there too, but most likely it seems like I'm going to end up doing some combination of like boot play, Zen and the Art of Face Punching, and alternative consent models.
Oh my God. So my friend Phoenix, just to kind of bring it back, my friend Phoenix was so sad that he couldn't go to like the face slapping / face punching because he had to like dash away for family shit and it's just like, damn it. Cause you know,
he said this is his first crew ever, right?
It's his first kink event.
I
told him that.
It's a great first event, though, because there's, like...
Everything.
Yeah, there's everything, and it's not really in time slots, so there's less
pressure.
Trade-offs, and there's more ability to approach people to be like, hey, I missed the class you did. Can you talk to me about the basics?
But think about what's going to happen next time he goes to, like, any other event.
What are you doing? So I literally, at dinner, I had a conversation with him, and I was just like, dude, I'm glad you had a great time. Realize it's never going to be like this again until you go to another groove. So he might be coming to Ramble Groove. He's going to see if he can fit it into his work. Yeah.
Because grooves are just such high energy that it just... It's not the same.
I will say I am more exhausted after a groove than any other event. And it's like it's the best kind of exhausted, but it is like this bone deep, like I have spent all of my energy.
Well, because if you think about it, we're here for like, 6 or 7 hours. Mm-hmm. You're on pretty much an adrenaline rush from the time you show up to the time you go to dinner.
Yep.
So it's just like a 6 or 7 or 8 hour long scene. Yeah. And then boom.
This level of emotional engagement that you just don't get with most other things. I mean,
But we do have at the Groove Introverts Corners.
Oh. Yes.
Where you can go and you can nap and you can be alone and you can come down a little so you don't have to be bone tired.
That's true, but you have to be wise enough to listen to your traitorous meat flesh and realize that it needs some time. I'm not good at that.
Yeah, I was thinking about this on the way here actually and doing like the calculations for how long of a day it was yesterday with how little sleep I had to try to figure out why I was so tired. And I was like, well, realistically, I had like an 18-hour day yesterday between the drive, and it was a high-energy day, like all day, when I wasn't getting excited learning like new rope things from Lokai, which like Deb and I were literally gasping over, so that's the level of investment there.
So cool.
He was making fun of us a little bit.
Is it his bag of tricks one? Or?
Yes.
No, speed bondage. Speed bondage.
But he taught us a way to double up the wraps on a TK to speed it up.
And I happened to be walking by like at that exact moment. I'm like, that's the thing I'm walking away from the groove with. Awesome. Thank you, Lokai. In 2 seconds, you just took 30% off of the time it takes me to tie a TK.
Yeah, I rarely go to rope classes like expecting to pick up significant things anymore. Like I usually will go to like pick up style or hope I get like one or two little tips out of it. And I have a full page of notes from that class yesterday of things I'm going to do. And I went up to Lokai afterwards, and I was like, thank you so much.
One of the reasons I still occasionally go to more traditional rope classes is that I think I get more of the teaching out of it than anything else. I mean, you know, the technique is the technique, but, like, how is this person presenting the information? It's actually really great because if it's a really good class, I'm picking up a lot about how they're handling the interactions, how they're dividing their attention, how they're managing the flow, making sure people are keeping up and everything else. And if it's a really awful class, I'm like actually still getting a lot. I'm like, this is what they're doing wrong. This is what they're doing wrong. This is how they could be doing that better. And I'm still getting something out of it because I'm being snobby and evaluating their teaching style.
I feel like you say snobby and I say viewing the education we are provided with a critical eye.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, this community has a pretty high standard to which we try to hold our educators. We don't always meet it, but I always appreciate when like really well-educated players go into classes with a critical eye.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was actually the reason that Deb and I ended up in the... Was it Bag of Tricks or Fundamentals that he taught?
It was Bag of Tricks, Fundamentals.
Oh, okay. So yeah, that's how we ended up in the class at the start of yesterday because there was nothing else going on. We were super interested and we were like, well, we can always watch Lokai Tai. So we went basically to see like how he was teaching it and what he was covering. And it was funny. He looked at us like, he was like, are you guys here for fundamentals? It's like, yeah, we're just going to chill.
And he kept like looking over at us the whole time being like,
why are you here?
What are you doing here? And we're just sitting there, like, everyone else was, like, tying single columns, and we're just, like, sitting there staring at Lokai.
Judging you.
Eventually, we just started helping people tie single columns. But, like, mostly we were just there because it's like, well, no one else is doing anything, and Lokai's teaching, and, like, you never really get to see Lokai teach unless you pay $400 for it. So, like, we'll do it.
See, Bill says judging. Really, we were sitting there, like, did you see the way he flicked that rope? Like, look at the way that moves.
Handling is incredible.
It's amazing. It really is. Handling things. We went to a 2-day thing that Zamil did in New York a while back, and so many of the things he was teaching were like, there was nothing new. I mean, he was, you know, doing a lot of like TK stuff, but like so many little tiny things about the rope handling, like the way that you're pinching both strands of the rope, mm-hmm. and like, you know, managing the tension on the top strand and the bottom strand to make sure that they're working out even as you're pulling them around, like little things that, like, you know, the first few years that I was doing rope, I wouldn't even appreciate it. Like, oh, that's a TK. The rope is in the right place.
It's fine.
Yeah. But like how solidly the frictions are locked down, for instance, right. like mm-hmm. little things like that. That turns out actually make a big difference. But if you're just looking at like how things look, or looking at pictures on the internet, or whatever, or taking a class from somebody who's presenting, even though they've been tying for like 2 years, you know, you just don't get a lot. You know. Mm-hmm. So. There is, you know, from somebody who has that level of skill, there is a lot of subtlety that you can get out of things.
And just watching somebody tie, just watching somebody like that tie.
Yeah, you don't think about it at first when you're still just trying to learn the formulas and the techniques, but that's what's impacted my tying the most. I was fortunate enough to have people like Murphy and Dove that I was watching and who talked to me about like rope handling and rope flow early on, like once I got the basics of handling like tension and doing the basic ties. They like took me aside and were like, so here's how you could be doing this better. That was hugely influential for me.
Yeah.
So with what time we have left, I just wanted to ask you guys if there's anyone that you wanted to thank, like, for your crew, for the time that you had, like, specifically, generally, you don't have to
thank
them.
I pretty much did it all myself, so I'm good.
Evan, always so humble.
I'll go. So, besides us fangirling over Lokai, like, he really taught me more the screw than anything else. Well, I would say my friends. I felt like when I went to Fusion, I didn't really get to connect with people as much. And I really, this weekend, I got to talk to a ton of people that I was happy to. Like, besides all of you guys, I got to, like, hang out with Lokai for a little bit, which never happens. I got to hang out with, like, Gray and Naya, Russ and Kashmira, I got to hang out and talk with Heather, which was awesome. She's always great to have conversations
amazing.
With. Yeah, it was just lots of like really good little conversations and spending time in groups of people that I don't get to see often enough, which was awesome.
Yeah, actually, really did appreciate all the people who were in sort of like genuinely engaged in the conversation in those two discussion classes in particular. I mean, like even the people who came without a lot of sort of prior experience or knowledge or self-analysis or whatever, like even that was useful because the process of trying to explain it to people helps you better understand your own points of view and both sort of analyzing them and figuring out how to present them effectively and understanding sort of where people tend to come from and the preconceived notions that they tend to have and how to sort of break those down, identify them, break them down, overcome them, that kind of thing. So like everybody that was coming at all different levels all added something to it.
Yeah, just doing a brief detour here. That kind of ties into a thing that I believe. Anytime I'm teaching somebody to tie rope, or to do any like basic skill set, is once you're at a basic level, start teaching someone else. When you teach somebody or when you're starting to build somebody up from a ground level, you have to think about things, and it makes things click in a way that will never really happen otherwise for you.
Well, and we talked about the philosophy of each one teach one yesterday, which I think is really valuable because besides benefiting yourself, like you're giving back to the community by being able to help someone else learn and potentially introducing them to something that will be impactful and keep them in kink.
I would maybe caveat that a little bit in that I think it's great for people who have learned new things to share those new things. I think that on some level it might be problematic if you consider that teaching though, because they don't necessarily understand. And that's one of the things you've heard people sort of, you know, who are critical of the whole groove format is like, oh, you don't know who knows what and how much they really know or whatever. And, you know, what's their qualification to teach this? But if you think of it as people sharing with each other, like, you don't have to have qualifications to share. It's just information. Like, it's there. You know, what other people do with it is, you know, going to be based on what they can do with it, how much they understand it, how worthwhile the information itself is. But But I think that that's an important distinction, though, because I have seen people, and it's frustrating for me to see people who, you know, you see them come into the scene, you see them learn some stuff, you see them push way, you know, they're practicing or even performing way ahead of their skill level. Mm-hmm. And then because they're doing, like, flashy things in clubs every once in a while, all of a sudden they're teaching their own classes.
Yes.
And it's, they're just, you know, you know just based on watching what they're doing that they are teaching above their heads. And that's, I think, very problematic.
Yep.
You know, I've seen people who have been around for a couple of years teaching classes, like, go into a public play space, clip off into a chain that's, like, this... I shouldn't even say this, but what the fuck ever, if they get offended, that's their problem. Went into the Crucible at M Street location. They have these beams there with these little chains hanging from them.
Yeah.
They're designed for hooking like little handcuffs to, so someone's up with their arms spread and you like flog them. Those things are not load-bearing. They're little bent eye screws that are screwed into the wooden beam. They're thin pieces of chain. The top link on the thin piece of chain is like one of those things where it's cut at a diagonal and then spread open so you can just bend it closed. So it's not welded or anything. It's just bent like this tiny little thin piece of
chain. Oh, God, do not tell me somebody clipped off their rig to that.
Oh, yeah. Hooked the carabiner to it, hooked the ring to it, and was doing like a really flashy, really impressive inverted fucking TK suspension over a floor with no mat.
No.
And I had to tell one of the people who was working that night, I'm like, you need to go over there and tell them that like nothing about that is okay. And the people got really upset, left, and didn't come back to the club for like months or years. Like they stopped going to the Crucible because people at the Crucible are what the fuck ever. But like,
it's a little scary.
Yeah, and some people don't know what they don't know.
Scary.
Yes,
and that's problematic.
And I think we see that problem a lot in specifically the rope community. Like as I've been learning, I've been learning rope for 2 years now. I don't think I know a thing about a thing, but I know how to tie a TK and
make Ella be in pain.
And make Ella be in pain, which is truly just
that's an important skill.
Yeah, no. It's the dream, really. But I think we see that a lot is the people who don't know what they don't know. And I find myself walking into classes, especially because the rope education in my home scene is lacking sometimes. And I, when we go to classes, I walk in and I go to these classes. I'm like, I mean, if this is the qualification for teaching, I could teach, but I don't think I can teach. Like, I'm not there yet. But, like, you don't know that, like, what you're doing is not okay.
Yeah.
Like, you can't just teach a TK and not teach where the tension needs to be. Like, come the hell on.
Yeah. Well, it looks just like in the pictures. Not teach, like, what the symptoms of nerve impingement are.
That's
the one that I see the most. It's like, people will be like, blah, 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 here's a TK. And like, okay, how are you going to tell your bottom, like, if they've never had nerve impingement, what some general warning signs are? Do you know what they are?
Did
like,
you see Douglas Kent's Land and Sky books?
Mm-hmm.
Which I think were interesting. I like the sort of the organizational way that he presented it. Mm-hmm. I think the graphics and everything were great. Mm-hmm. The pictures were
adorable.
Like from a photography perspective, the pictures were adorable.
Yeah.
He had like one page in the one of the two books that was on fucking suspension. He had one page on hardpoint analysis.
Yeah.
At least 50% of it was just straight wrong. The other, you know, the other half of it was like not well informed. The other page, the one page on nerve damage in the suspension book, the page on nerve damage was also woefully inadequate and in places inaccurate.
Yeah.
Like,
I think S&M has a great post on FetLife somewhere where he's breaking down like just mocking like. He went through the entire picture, went through the entire book, and like if you look at page this, the tensions are completely uneven, the wraps are at different heights, like just broke down like why all the actual pictured bondage was just not good.
Yeah.
Possibly dangerous. And so there's that. I mean, the pictures look very nice, but just as actual examples that are problematic. And the two biggest like hard point evaluation and nerve damage, the two most important, most significant like things that will fuck someone up. Apart from like getting in a car accident on the way to the club, which is practically speaking, but like those two things were just a shit show.
So, with the few minutes that we have left, I don't know if anybody had anything else they wanted to say, like thank you for the grew or anything like that.
Thanks to Jay for organizing an awesome grew.
Yes, and the volunteers.
And the volunteers and everyone who made this play space.
And CCPS for hosting.
CCPS is just
and Gray and I for facilitating and helping out. Yes.
We've run out of water.
And Miles for making me bacon this morning.
Yes. Yes. Although, technically, I bought the bacon and I bought the eggs.
So poetic for bringing the bacon.
That's my thing. When for After Grooves, I buy bacon and eggs because they say all you get is cheap-ass pancakes, which I'm like, that's nice, but I want protein. So
yeah. Well, I actually walked in. I was like, I thought we weren't allowed to have bacon. And Nia looks at me. She's like, you're allowed to bring your own bacon. I'm just not bringing it for you.
Like, oh, yes. A Grew will never provide you with bacon, but there will almost always be somebody who is happy to cook bacon if you bring it.
Yes.
Just an important note.
If I ever do a brew again, I'm going to put bacon on the menu.
Well, please.
Grey will fight you.
Oh, we will have bacon at Ramble Hill. Yay! Because it will be provided by Harry.
Yes. Oh, okay, good.
Yes. That's what's called burying the lead. Just for the like all of that. Oh, how great the Rambo Brew is! Never mention the bacon because.
Sorry.
Well, now
we make it.
Now Evan's sold. So
bacon, you know,
bacon.
I'll be there.
Cool. I'll post it on FetLife tomorrow.
Okay.
Just so everybody knows, they'll be bacon.
Well, on that note,
reason to get in the Rambo Brew
bacon.
Okay. Well. Thank you, Evan, Mara, Ella, Deb, and Bill for helping me with my podcast. And hopefully you guys listening will show up to Ramble Guru and meet all these people and have fun. But as for right now, we're almost at the hour mark and I'm fucking tired. And I think some people have to get on the road. So yeah, this has been yet another episode of Daddy's Good Girl. Thanks for listening, guys.